Testing and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 5 and a 6 and a 7 and an 8 and a 9 and a 10 and 11 and a 12 and a 13 and a 14 and a 15 and a 16 and a 17 and an 18 and a 19 and a 20. Just happened to be sitting in Bill Cosby's dressing room after the first show, and this will be Sunday afternoon, and I want you to know that if you miss this one, you miss a cracking good show. I had a couple of feelings. Since we do a lot of news on our station, we had an announcement from the stage. The Cosbys are expecting a baby in April?
Well, yes, the beginning of April.
Congratulations already.
My third daughter.
I wonder, now, don't figure this.
I give up.
But Bill, consider this. You could be a Cub Scout father. You could learn to play football all over again with him.
With who?
Your son, the son.
No. I was sabotaged twice. See, my first child was supposed to be a boy, and I still have a feeling that somebody's going to knock on my door and they're going to say, well, it was just a joke. Here's your son. I have that feeling, but I've just given up. I think that my wife is just a girl haver, that's all.
But don't you think this, Bill, as long as your wife writes at least half of your copy,
yeah,
a lot of your material,
sure,
don't you think somewhere along in here she's got to change the scenario just a little bit and give you some more ad-libs to work with?
I wish she would, but she seems to like the same old joke of having me as a loser. See, I'd probably leave show business if I had a son. See, because it takes an awful lot. You have to buy a lot of basketballs,
mm-hmm,
and you have to coach him,
mm-hmm,
see, and right away. You don't have time to work on the stage when you're trying to get him to swim and dribble the ball right and kick it, you know, because that's all he's going to do. You're going to be pro everything, all everything.
Well, if this is what it's going to be, then you better have another girl because we want you on the stage. We
yes,
love you out here.
I think that's what my wife wants,
great
too.
Yeah,
wants
yeah,
me on the stage.
On the
because,
stage.
She's always talking about fur.
Bring home the loot for the fur.
Huh? Yes, yes.
Bill, would you tell the audience a little something about the new TV show? Everybody's pretty excited about that.
Well, it won't be on until 1970.
We'll wait.
Yeah, and so will I. But it has to do with, first of all, the man, a man. He will live in the, not exactly the ghetto. Yes, it will be the ghetto. He will live in an apartment building. The whole thing will have to do with the man and his neighbors, his friends, and his girlfriends. I wanted it to be a family thing. But then, after thinking it over, In my race, there are too many different hues, so to speak. And if I got married, or if I let the character get married, then the different hues disappear, I mean, with the women.
Mm-hmm.
Because we go from blue-black to almost passing,
yes,
you see.
Yes.
So I think in order to bring this across, that this man should be single so that he can become involved with, you know, the different hues. Therefore, that will be, you know, a little bit of an education for people watching also. And it will also enable Afro-American, Black American, light-skinned American, Negro, Black before the revolutionary cultural change. Let the light-skinned Negro women work too, because, you know, it's we've kind of left them out. A little, you know, everything you see on TV, if it is a black person working, they are really, really black. You can't miss it. You
yeah,
know, there's that dark. But we also have Negroes who are very light, you see, and male and female. They've got to find work somewhere.
Pardon me.
Or else we're just as prejudiced as the people who wouldn't let the black people.
It's a funny thing how.
But anyway, what I didn't want to bring you down
yeah,
with that.
I'm following.
Well, I went up to the old man on the mountain on you at that time. But the idea behind that is to get everybody working in it. It will be comedy. The man will be a detective. I would say 20 to 25% of it will have to do with escape, suspense, some violence. Sure, you can't have a detective series without it.
Yeah.
But 70% of it will have to do with the people in the building, the community, the problems that exist. And this is a series which 70% exists around the man's home life. And if you grow to like the man, which I'm sure you will, then you will understand his problems and you will identify with his problems and you will see that he is the hero, he is the good guy. Then you will pull for the good guy instead of your own convictions or the heavy.
You work a lot of ad lib, don't you? I mean, a lot of this is almost Bill Cosby speaking. I've always had this feeling about you that the lines...
You're talking about the series?
I'm speaking of the way you seem to work. I see you on stage here. I've seen you in the series before, The Ice Spy. I get a feeling this is Cosby. Now, I've heard that you're not going to actually work from script. Is that true?
No, don't want any script.
Well, then it's got to be Cosby. If you're not working from somebody else's lines, it's got to be you. Huh?
Sure, but that's what I was asking you before. Yeah. Because if you say on the stage, of course, all of it's Cosby, you see. On the screen, it comes from script. But I've learned to act in the last 3 years with Bob Culp as my teacher. Therefore, if I do a movie, then that character that I take on is a character that I've developed. If it's a television series, then I'm more or less like myself. Because television has to do with personality. Very small box, and you have to kind of like that guy.
Yeah.
Well, I can't think of a better guy to like than myself. You know.
I'm with you. Why not? Sure.
It's just that, without being conceited, I think that I'm a pretty nice guy. You know, I don't hate anybody, really.
Unless
they hate me.
Your father's a very patient man, though.
He put up with you for many years.
He was
all right, because we put up with him, too. You know.
I'd have torn the meat off your bones.
That's what I mean, see? He would do that every now and then. But he had some tricks of his own going there. Like he used to tell us stories before we go to sleep. And each time he told us a story, we never got to sleep. Because his stories had to do with people who were going to eat us up. You know. And when he left that room, like even under the covers, we weren't safe. You know, Dad was slick.
He started the Turtles then, maybe.
No.
Somewhere back.
No, I must say that is a true story. Russell started the Turtle Head. My thing was chipmunks. I had him with the chipmunks. See, chipmunks had big teeth and would eat him up.
Oh, yeah.
So he used to always go under the covers when the chipmunks, when they were coming after him, he could hear them. I said, they're coming down the hall and chip. Because my brother was lighter. He is lighter than I. And I used to like lighter-skinned
people.
Yes, and he's going to eat up all light-skinned, and he would want to...
I address myself to those of you in the room here. I have had the pleasure of working some with Bert Tilstrom and Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Mm,
and to me, Kukla and Ollie are so real, and Beulah Widge. And when I see you as a boy and your brother, and I see your two little daughters, the same thing happens. You have that uncanny ability, I'm sure, for all of us who sit in your audience, whether it's on the box or in a place like the auditorium tonight. And we feel very strongly we identify with you.
Well, that's the whole idea. And I don't think that anybody can really make up stories like without there being at least 85% truth.
Yeah.
You know, of course, if you start to tell a story about when they took your tonsils out, of course, you have to make it funny. You know, it's like one time I was telling a friend of mine about the first time I had a hernia operation. Well, a hernia operation, I came home and all the guys in the neighborhood were like waiting for me. And it's the second time in my life I ever had a taxi cab. See, each time my mother brought me home from the hospital. First time was with the tonsils. The second time was with the hernia. And the guys watched me, get out of the cab. And I was like champion of the neighborhood, man, because they didn't think I was going to come back. Because like their concept of people going to the hospital is too many people go and they don't come back, And so I was in the bed, my mother, she said, "Now Bill can't have any company, can't see anybody or anything, and he can't get up and walk." Well, the kids didn't know what a hernia operation was, They thought that the guy had taken out all of my insides, And so finally, when they could come to see me, like they came in just wide-eyed, and they all sat on the edge and talked very quiet, and I was really cool, So the doctor, this doctor came in, and he says, I've come to get your stitches out. And so my mother said, "Okay, fellas, you have to leave." And he said, "No." He said, "Let the boy stay." Now, seven kids. And he said, let the boy stay. And so he pulled up my pajamas. And that's the only time I ever wore pajamas when I had my tonsils out, when I had the hernia operation. Other than that, I always went to sleep in my underwear, So everybody knew I was sick because I had on pajamas. So he pulled down my pajamas, and he started to take out a stitch. And the doctor says, "Now," he says, "Now, Bill," he says, "you want do you want to go to sleep while I take these stitches out because it hurts? And he winks at me. So I said, what? He said, these stitches are really going to be painful. He said, especially, he said, first five. He said, if you want to, he says, I'll give you ether. And he winks at me. So I didn't know what he was talking about. You know, I said, no, I don't want you to sleep. So he snips the first one. Now I'm going to pull this out. He said, I think you really feel a lot of pain. And all the guys are sitting there like, you know, they're not even breathing, man. Yeah. So he took the first one out. He goes like, you know, and he looks at me. He said, you didn't make a face. And I said, no. He said, didn't it hurt? I said, yeah. And the guy, God, really tough. God. So then he gets to the second one and he says something like, you know, now this next one, a lot of people have passed out when I've taken out the second one. You know. Yeah. So I said, no, go ahead, Doc. And he pulled the second one and one of the kids fainted. It fell right out, you know. And the guy said, oh, man, God, it's really tough. Now he takes all the stitches out. And he mops it up. And he says, now don't get out of this 3 months. Because if you get out of this bed, he says, your whole inside just going to pop right out. And your legs going to fall off. And all the guys say, man, cuz you're going to be here a long time. You know, and laugh. Now, my mother says, okay, fellas, you all have to go outside and play. So they all leave. And like I said, the doctor says, your clothes go out. So I said, but he said, and I'm still stiff, you know, tight side, kind of hurt a little bit. And I get up and I walk outside to where they're playing ball. And guys started running away from me.
They don't get the splatter.
It's like a ghost, man, you know. Yeah. And I tell you, man, for like at least a week, I was the talk of the whole neighborhood, you know. Cause is strong, man.
Yeah.
Cause is the strongest guy in the world, man. I bet you Cause could be Frankenstein, man. You know, all kinds of talk like that, you know. And it was really great, man. Because I guess the parents straightened it out later, you know, and said, well, the doctor was probably doing a thing like that. But they were really, they identified with what was going on with me, like, you know, like friends. So if we can get people to say to themselves, yeah, that happened to me, then I figure, you know, how much of a great difference is there that goes on between the individual and his public, you see? Because we all come from the same thing. It's just a choice that we make of what we want to be. So that's my thing. So without saying what color somebody is, what I'm saying is identify with me.
We do. And I would just say this to you. I've been in this theater now twice in the last month. The last night, I was here on the night of the Battle of the Hilton to MC a show for the Democratic Wives of the Conventionaires. And there was much hate up and down this street. And even in this theater, we had a stink bomb in the middle of Ravel's Bolero. Try that sometime on your symphony.
We should get him in the middle of Roy Rogers.
Yeah. But there was a bad feeling that night. And tonight here with you and Reverend Jackson and the Breadbasket Choir and O.C. Smith, I felt an awful lot of love. And yeah, that wasn't all a black audience, Bill Cosby. It was a white, what's color? What color are you? These were people.
Sure.
So maybe guys like you make it just a little bit easier for people who do have a bad time, depending on their own hang-up.
Well, we'll try.
Conversation with Bill Cosby in dressing room while he gets ready to go on and knock him dead on show number two.
Want to see my hernia?
Love to see that hernia scar.